Coming up on Golf Today, the Ryder Cup just ended, but some of us are already thinking about 2025 at Bethpage. Who will captain, who will play, and who will win? Settle in for some way too early Ryder Cup predictions. Well, you better believe Ludwig Aubert will be at Bethpage, but right now he's in Mississippi in the afterglow of a European win. What will he do for an encore at Sanderson Farms? And a busy time for Jim Furyk, vice captain last week in Rome, host this week in Jacksonville on PGA Tour Champions. Jim and his better half join us because two Furyks are better than one on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
And we kick things off with some news breaking this morning. Golf Week senior writer Beth Ann Nichols sharing 11-time LPGA Tour winner Lexi Thompson has an invite, a sponsor's invite, to next week's Shriners Children's Open. Thompson finished in a tie for eighth at last week's Northwest Arkansas Championship. Is coming off a nice bounce back, a 3-1 record at the Solheim Cup. She will become the seventh woman to tee it up on the PGA Tour. Babe Diedrichsen-Zaharias, the last one to make the cut, that coming back in 1945. The most recent to play on the PGA Tour, Brittany Lincecum at the 2018 Barbasol Championship. So some big news and a lot of eyeballs will be on that event next week out in Las Vegas. Welcome into Golf Today. Here with you for the next couple hours. Have a ton of guests to get to, including past Olympian, a past Ryder Cup captain. We are checking the list as we go on for these next couple hours. George Savarikas hanging with Damon Hack. Surprising news with Lexi Thompson getting the sponsor's invite.
I would say so. Good for her. Been a tough few years for Lexi Thompson. I was surprised she played early, first group out, first session out for the Solheim Cup. She went 3-1 on the week, coming off a top 10 finish in Arkansas. She's an 11-time winner on the LPGA, arguably one of the two or three most popular players on the LPGA Tour. Those sponsors' exemptions are exactly that, for the tournament to do with those what they want. Lexi's a big name. She's a big hitter. I imagine it will attract some extra eyeballs next week.
There are a lot of players on the LPGA Tour who have aspirations of one day playing on the PGA Tour. I had this conversation with Danielle Kang a couple years ago. Used to have a podcast with HV3, and she was saying, I would want to play in this very event, partially because she lives in Las Vegas,
sure,
partially because she thinks lengthwise this would be the best chance for a woman to snap the streak of missed cuts that dates back to Babe Diedrichsen-Zaharias because of the elevation and the fact that it plays, I want to say, 71 and change.
Yeah.
But with the altitude, it plays significantly shorter. So the distance issue will be offset to some extent playing in that thin air outside in Las Vegas. I mean, just outside the mountains.
Yeah, there. It's also often a hot topic issue. You think back to Annika Sörenstam in 2003. Not everybody wanted her on the PGA Tour to play at Colonial. So there's already been some reaction at the Sanderson Farm from the players. Let's hear what they think about Lexi competing at the Shriners.
I think it should create some buzz. She's been one of the big names in the women's game for, feels like forever now, feels like a decade or so, even though she's still young. So I think it's great. It's a tournament I've always loved playing. I've had a little bit of success there, and like I said, I think if it generates a little bit of excitement and buzz around the event, and I don't know what her expectations are, and I know she's a great player, but I just think it's great if the fans can rally around her and brings people out to watch. Then, you know, she's a superstar in the women's game, so I think it's great.
I think it could attract a group of fans that might not, you know, come out and watch it if she wasn't in the field. So I think it's great. You know, it draws more attention to not only golf in general, but women's golf too. And it'll certainly put a spot on a great event that benefits, you know, hospitals and children's hospitals and charities of that sort. So, yeah, I think it's great. I'm looking forward to it. And might have a little different atmosphere than it normally would if she were not playing.
So more reaction, this from PGA Tour winner Peter Malnati. I know that Lexi at times has been one of the top players in the LPGA Tour. She's obviously very athletic. Distance won't be a problem. She'll hit it far enough. My gut reaction when I saw that the tournament was reaching, you know, trying to get to drum up interest. I think I understand that is the case. I don't think we're going to need to resort to gimmicks to drum up interest. I shouldn't have said gimmicks. I don't know that having Lexi play as a gimmick, but I don't think that tournaments are going to have to go through these kind of lengths to drum up interest and get storylines that they can sell, because I think these events are actually going to have a lot of meaning. Having Lexi play will certainly get a lot of headlines, and that's the goal for Shriners and the host organization in Vegas. That's great. Obviously, she's a professional athlete. She's accomplished a lot. I mean, who knows what'll happen? She may go play really well, and it'll be huge. She may play absolutely terrible and finish 132nd. Either way, she's a professional golfer. She has a spot in the field. The tournament is, if it gets them the attention that they want, it works out positively for them. It's great for all of it. So understand Peter Malnati trying to kind of couch what he's saying with reasonable expectations for Lexi coming into it. But the greater point was that he feels the tournament has to drum up interest with the kind of the new look fall schedule compared to the complexion of the events and the fields that we used to see in years past.
And Peter's thinking out loud. I think he's thinking extemporaneously. Yes, he's trying to put it all, you know, into some sort of context. You know, good for Lexi, yes, but it doesn't need to be a sideshow, a gimmick. Is this elevating the women's game? Is it elevating Lexi? Is it elevating the tournament? Does the tournament need this? Is the tournament so bereft of other storylines that it has to reach for Lexi Thompson just to get the needed eyeballs? So I think he's just trying to make sense of what the message is by Lexi Thompson receiving this sponsor's exemption. And we should say, not the first time she's competed against the men. Does so in Naples at the Franklin Templeton Shootout.
Yeah, we see her every year playing in that event. And she's one of the longest hitters on the LPGA Tour. She had a good week at the Solheim Cup. It's been four years since she last won on the LPGA Tour. I hope for her she's ready to take on the added media obligations, the spotlight, the scrutiny when it comes to playing an event like this, where she's going to be the center of attention. Yeah. All eyes are going to be on her for good or bad, for whatever happens. Yeah. And she's going to have a ton of people that are advocating on her behalf and wanting to see her make the cut. It would be an incredible storyline. But if things also go south, there's going to be a lot of lights in front of you wondering, okay, what happened Thursday, Friday at this event where, you know, there was a lot of hope that you'd be a potential storyline into the weekend.
And as we saw in Spain, Lexi not always comfortable answering questions that might be a little bit difficult that are posed to her in terms of the chip shot that she messed up on the 18th hole.
No, for sure. And I think, like, it gets so lost with sponsors' invites saying, oh, so-and-so deserves to be there. Well, no. If they deserved to be there, they'd be in the field. The sponsor has an entertainment product.
Oh, can do whatever they want.
And that's why they're extending these type of invitations. So I think big picture, 10,000-foot view for female fans, for male fans, this is a positive. You just hope that she performs to the best of her ability.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'll bring eyeballs. I'm not saying it's a positive 100%. I think how she plays and how the week goes with her answering questions is a big factor as well. Well, Lexi and the Americans, of course, came up just short at the Solheim Cup a couple weeks ago in Spain. And on Sunday, Europe able to win back the Ryder Cup when Tommy Fleetwood captured that clinching point in his match with Ricky Fowler at Marco Simone. Europeans needed 14.5 points, ultimately won 16.5. to 11.5, setting off these European home celebrations, what, seventh time in a row? A streak that began in 97. Early stages of the World Wide Web, we've been seeing it. You know, email was a new thing when Europe was starting this streak on home soil.
The streak started. Seve was captain in 97.
Yes, he was.
At Valderrama.
He had the fastest golf cart on property. He was everywhere.
He was zooming around.
He was. And here are the records from last week. Rory, Hovland, Rahm, all the big players showed up. The captain's picks did well. Luke Donald pressed all the right buttons.
You know what happens when you're a Ryder Cup rookie? You correct mispronunciations. Ludwig Auber. What a story he was, from PGA Tour U number one. He was a workhorse, playing in 4 of 5 matches at the Ryder Cup, 2-2 record. Looks like he's going to be an absolute stud and a huge factor for them going forward, Damon.
Absolutely. Here he is draining this putt on the par for sixth. And for more, let's send it out to Jackson, Mississippi. Our Kira K. Dixon on site this week with more on Mr. Auber.
Well, Damon, you just mentioned all of the eyeballs that'll be on Lexi Thompson next week. A lot of eyeballs will be on Ludwig Auber here in Jackson. I spoke with him earlier about the whirlwind that he's had coming all the way to Mississippi from Marco Simone and why he's decided to tee it up this week.
Yeah, it's been a lot. It's been, you know, a busy couple of traveling hours. I was quite tired on that flight on Monday, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, obviously we had a fantastic week last week, and it's something that I'll never forget. And I'm so proud to have been a part of that team. And, you know, I'm so proud to kind of create a relationship with those guys, and it's been a lot of fun. But, you know, I'm here this week, and I knew that was going to be the case before I played in Rome, and I knew that I was going to play this week, and that's where my focus is.
Yeah, traveling hours, not traveling days. I like that. So you mentioned the memories, the lasting memories that you've been able to create over the last week. When you were sitting on that plane thinking about everything that happened over the last week, what stands out to you as the lasting memory that will endure when you look back years and years from now?
You know, I think there will be a lot. I think there's going to be a lot of things that it's difficult to kind of pinpoint one specific thing. I do feel like, obviously, you know, in the Ryder Cup, everyone talks about the first tee and the nerves and the excitement that comes with it. And it is very true. You are very I was very nervous when I was standing on that tee box. And I think that's something that I'll, you know, have with me for a very long time. But I do feel like also the, you know, the dynamic of the team group that we had, and everyone was very supportive of each other, which was really cool to see, to kind of see that, you know, even though we're playing an individual sport, that everyone can kind of come together and act as a collective. So I do think there's going to be a lot to you know, look back on. But I think those are the things, yeah.
Well, speaking of the dynamic of the team group, this is the first time that you've really had the opportunity to spend a lot of meaningful time with the likes of Rory McIlroy, Jon Rahm, Victor Hovland, who you had an incredible performance with. What stands out to you as the main lessons learned from them that you will now apply to the rest of your golf career?
Well, first off, they're incredibly at golf. They're very good at golf. So for me to be around that and, you know, kind of see what it takes to be the best player in the world, because even though, you know, I've played with them a little bit, not too much, and kind of pick their brains about certain things. And, you know, I'm you know, in an early stage of my career, and I feel like I have a lot to learn. So for me to kind of get, you know, a little bit of a head start to that and test the waters a little bit, it's been unbelievable. So for me to, you know, hopefully use those lessons a little bit in my own career and my own, you know, craft, I'll, you know, be happy to do that.
And speaking of your career, it's still kind of a new thing. It's only been 4 or 5 months since you were a student playing amateur golf. Now you're a winner on the DP World Tour. You're a winner with the European Ryder Cup team. Can you put into perspective how your life has changed going from relative anonymity to entering the world stage?
Yeah, I mean, it's changed a lot, but, you know, I'm still me, and I'm still, you know, the same person. That's not going to change no matter what happens. So, but yeah, it's opened a lot of doors. You know, I feel like, you know, playing these events has been, you know, a real blessing, and I'm so happy to be able to do that, and I'm so happy to have these experiences. But once again, you know, I'm just me, I'm just myself, and I'm trying to stay true to that.
And speaking of playing events, no one would have faulted you if you decided not to come to Mississippi this week after the week that you had last week. So simply, why have you decided to play in Mississippi this week?
Yeah, you know, I knew beforehand that I was going to play here. I was committed to the event, and I wanted to honor my commitment. I wanted to play a lot of these fall events as much as I can, and even though I'm a bit tired, I'm a bit exhausted, you know, I'll try to preserve my energy this week and be ready to go on Thursday. But, you know, I wanted to honor my commitment. My commitment is the PGA Tour, and that's what I wanted to do, and I think this is a great way to do it.
Okay, guys, so Ludvig mentioned there that he's a little bit tired. Let's go through the timeline of what he's had to get from Marco Simone to Mississippi. He stayed at that European after party till about 3:30 in the morning. And then Monday morning at around noon, he got on a flight from Rome to Montreal. Then there were some Canadian visa issues that he had to deal with. Ultimately, he was able to get from Montreal to Atlanta, got in bed around midnight. Who knows what time that was in Italy. Then the next morning, on Tuesday morning, he was on a flight around 11 a.m. to get here to Jackson. And what does he do? But he comes out here to the Country Club of Jackson, plays 9 holes. I asked him how he played, and he said, actually, pretty good. And you know what? I would expect nothing less of the young Ryder Cupper, the lone Ryder Cupper in the field this week.
Yeah, got to respect the hustle. Kira Kay breaking some news. Remember Ryder Cup Europe? They had tweeted last man standing, Tyrrell Hatton, 3 a.m. She said he was there till 3:30. Oh, to be young and wild and living it up in your first Ryder Cup just out of college. He's off at 1:50 Eastern time. How about this group? A couple guys who've won on the PGA Tour, Adam Svensson and Akshay Bhatia, both had dubs last season.
Yes, they did. And speaking of the Ryder Cup, Jim Furyk just returned from Rome as he was one of Zach Johnson's vice captains for the U.S. Ryder Cup team. Furyk had already served as U.S. captain in 2018 at Le Golf National, was also a vice captain with victorious U.S. teams as Hazeltine 2016, Whistling Straits in 2021. Now this week, Jim is the tournament host for the Constellation Furyk and Friends, which takes place at Timaquana Country Club in Jacksonville. Now, the locals call it Timmy. Sweet spot, by the way. Event benefits Northern Florida charities through the Jim and Tabitha Furyk Foundation. Live first-round coverage begins Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern time. The foundation created to help families and children in need. It's based in Jacksonville. The nonprofit charity collaborates with organizations such as the Wolfson's Children's Hospital, Blessings in a Backpack, Community Pets Care, with the foundation providing funding to help the local community. And so great to have Jim and Tabitha with us now from Jacksonville. And Jim, the American golf fans are a bit bummed out this week, as you probably know. Is victory, though, the only way to measure whether the U.S. Ryder Cup franchise took a step forward or backward last week?
Well, obviously, we're disappointed. The goal was to take the cup over and bring it back home. That wasn't the case. I think we need to, I would not say it's a failure or we took a step backwards. We got beat. We got beat by a team that played better. I think our 12 players laid it out on the line. They showed a lot of heart on Sunday, made it very close coming down the stretch. I was on the 15th tee with Wyndham Clark, and it got really tight there for a few minutes. And so, I'm not going to say this week was a failure, but obviously we're disappointed in the result, and we're looking, gonna have to look forward to Bethpage, regroup, and get ready to get after him in New York in a couple years.
Jim, you have such a different perspective than we do sitting on the desk as a player, captain, vice captain. You know what the team room dynamics are like. Is there one change that you would like to emphasize in the future? And I'm gonna couch this, 8 of the last 9 have been won by the home team in the Ryder Cup. It's arguably the hardest thing to do is to win a road Ryder Cup.
Yeah, and the one that we lost at home, we had a huge lead, a 4-point lead that we blew for Davis Love at Medina. So we should have won that one as well. And the home team has seemed to have dominated. But as far as changes in the team room, no, I think Zach Johnson did a wonderful job. He was a great captain. He's very organized. I think he gave the players the freedom to be themselves. And with that, I believe they bonded very, very well. You saw the support everyone had for Patrick Cantlay on the 18th green and the waving of the hats. I guess my biggest disappointment, where I feel bad for Zach, is hearing or having to read about a rift that we had in the team room or that guys weren't getting along, and it just simply wasn't true. I think the guys supported each other. I think you would see that in the obviously see that in the media room. Well, I guess we're on our national alert right now. But I think you saw that in the media room afterwards, and you saw a lot of support from the team. And it's just part of the Ryder Cup. There always seems to be some, at the end of the day, someone's going to report one way or another that something happened bad, but it just simply wasn't the case, and I would stand by that forever.
Well, before we get to the important work you both are doing this week, Tabitha, what are these weeks like for you? Paris, Rome, Whistling Straits. You've been a part of so many teams. As a wife, what are they like?
It's always a great week for us as well. I will say that Kim and Zach did a great job of including the spouses and significant others to be a part of everything. So I think we all felt like we had a little stake in what was going on and making sure that everybody was having the best week possible. But it was truly a great group of guys, a great group of girls. We enjoyed our time together. And really, we're not there to go shopping or do anything. We're truly there to try to bring a win to that team and do anything that we can to make sure that we have a great experience and that we get the best result at the end. So we were also disappointed. It's very hard to watch these guys put their heart and soul into it and not come up with a cup. So always enjoy those weeks.
Tabitha, how about the growth of this event, Constellation Furyk and Friends? I remember back in the day, this was a bit smaller. And now look at this. You guys are hosting a PGA Tour Champions event that affects so many lives. Why is this such a passion project for the both of you?
Well, as you know, being that you were at our smaller Furyk and Friends, our two-day event, and we're great support through the Golf Channel as well, you know, it's really about giving back. And with doing that event, we had sort of reached a plateau where we couldn't grow anymore and we couldn't help the charities that we wanted to help further. And so this was a way to do that. So seeing the work that we've done in the past and how much it's impacted people and how now with the new growth and being into our third year, you know, in the first 2 years, we raised $2.5 million for charity. And to be able to just see the difference it's making with the kids and the families and the community really is rewarding.
Give us a glimpse into what it's like being a tournament host and the curveballs you either have to deal with leading up to the event or during tournament week.
I'll be honest. Tabitha and our staff, led by Adam Renfro, our tournament director, they do a wonderful job. We have a small staff of six that run this event. We bring some interns in. Basically, for me, guys, I get to sit in front of the camera. I get to talk about all the great work they do. It is a long week. Not only am I playing a golf tournament, but we have an event every night. You know, Tuesday night, we had our concert. We had Dustin Lynch and Carly Pierce. Tonight, we have a dinner with our sponsor in Constellation at the house. Thursday night, we have Sister Hazel on the back lawn for all of our sponsors. I'll have another dinner with Constellation on Friday night to entertain some of their guests. So I'm doing something each and every night along with the golf tournament, but I wouldn't have it any other way. It's a lot of fun. And really, guys, I'm being honest, I don't do much during the year. I try to stay out of the way. I try to stay out of the office. Tabitha, Adam, our staff, they do a wonderful job. I'm very proud of them, and I hope they know that. And now we just get to kind of, you know, basically smile and shine and show everyone how great their work is.
Tabitha, Jim is one of the most competitive, intense, great competitors that I've ever covered. Is he relaxed at all this week? Can he kick back and put his feet up a little bit and smile a few times? Or is this going to be business as usual for Jim this week?
You know, Jim just plays golf.
I'm able to compartmentalize. I think in this event, I've been lucky the last couple of years. I've played very, very well in our own event. And I've been able to kind of turn the switch on and go play golf for 5 hours and then turn the switch off and kind of go entertain and have some fun. And I don't know, maybe in a crazy way, it's been kind of good for me to get away from golf in the evenings and think about other things. And just, you know, my mind's clear when I get to the golf course.
Jim, golf can be such a solitary game week to week with all the travels you have, just how often you're on the road. To get to host an event and share it with Tabitha, to have this be something that you guys work on together. I know you are more working on the game inside the ropes, but to share this, how meaningful is that for both of you?
No, it really is. I'm proud of Tabitha. I see how hard she works. It's a full-time job for her. She's in the office each and every day. She's up late at nights in bed on the computer. So she really, this is a labor of love for her, and she's done a great job with the event. And again, our staff has as well. We have a great young staff. They've done wonderful work, And I'm proud of all of them, but I know Tabitha knows how proud I am of her. She really takes this to heart and really is involved in our community with our foundation and a number of different charities. So it's been wonderful to see, and it's been wonderful that the tour gave us this opportunity to grow here in our hometown.
There are some wonderful families in this great game that we all love. You think about the Nicklaus family. I have to tell you, Jim and Tabitha are wonderful heirs to that great tradition. Have a great week, guys. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, y'all. I appreciate it, George and Damon. Thank you.
Stay with us here on Golf Today. The Old Course plays host to this week's DP World Tour stop. Just one of three courses you get to play as part of the Alfred Dunhill Links. We're going to talk to the defending champion, Ryan Fox. He's going to share his memories with us from St. Andrews and his memorable win next. Ryan Fox joins us now, defending champ at the Dunhill. And Ryan, you know, this event unfortunately kind of gets buried for the American audience post Ryder Cup. It's during football season. It's one of the best events week in and week out on the DP World Tour. For someone who hasn't experienced it, how would you describe it?
Yeah, it's a very cool week. I mean, we get to play three iconic links courses. Obviously, St. Andrews probably being the top of that. A bunch of celebs play, a bunch of businessmen from all over the world, or business people, should I say, from all over the world. And it's just an amazing week. You take out the Scottish weather and it might be the best tournament in the world.
Well, with that Scottish weather, you have some of the most famous golf courses in the world, like the Old Course. You've also won at Wentworth now. As a professional golfer, does it matter where you win?
To an extent, no, but to an extent, yes. I mean, you know, you look at events like this on the DP World Tour, you know, Dunhill Links has been a mainstay for, I think, 20 years, and the BMW PGA has been at Wentworth. There's been an event at Wentworth for so many years on the DP World and European Tours. And, yeah, there's a win is a win regardless of where it is, but there's certain places that make it feel extra special. And, you know, for me last year, you know, walking down the 18th at the home of golf, having a chance to win a tournament pretty much doesn't get any better. And it was pretty much the same at Wentworth this year. It's such an iconic event for us on the DP World Tour. And yeah, very, very special to win there.
Yeah, flagship victory at the DP World Tour stop there with the BMW PGA Championship. Ryan, and talking with guys who tee it up with the Dunhill Links Championship, so much of it is the courses you play, the people that you spend time with during that week inside the ropes, and then the stories you hear once play is over outside the ropes. Any great memories or stories you can tell from what's happened after the conclusion of play?
Yeah, one of the good ones for me, my first year we went to the function, which was 2017, and they have a big party on a Saturday night, and there's a bunch of musicians that play the event, Huey Lewis being one, Ronan Keating. There's multiple others, and they get a band up and play, and obviously there's a few drinks flowing, but after that, all the celebrity musicians get up and take the stage and sing songs. You know, having Huey Lewis sing The Power of Love with the backing band is pretty amazing. They've had Tico Torres, the drummer from Bon Jovi, come up and play a Bon Jovi song. I mean, you know, I think that lasted until about 3 o'clock in the morning the first year I went to the function, and it's just an amazing event. And then there's an after party in the Old Course Hotel overlooking the 17th, which is it's a pretty fun week, and they look after us really well. And I know the amateurs have a great time, and it's certainly an event I look forward to every year.
A lot of great places to party after a round of golf at the Old Course Hotel being one, the Dunvegan Hotel being another, where the drinks are flowing. I understand you got to go to the hotel, great bar, restaurant, and hang a picture from your victory 1 year ago. What was that like for you to kind of relive that moment?
Yeah, that was a very cool experience. I mean, the Dunvegan is an iconic part of St. Andrews. It's probably closer to the 18th green at St. Andrews than the clubhouse is, and it's a spot where golfers go to relax and reminisce about their rounds. And, you know, there's a photo of who of golf in there. I mean, Tiger, John Daly, Shane Lowry, Brooks Koepka, Sam Snead, you name it. You know, most of them have been in the Dunvegan, and they've got a photo with the owner or whatever. So it was, yeah, a great experience to have my little bit of history up on that wall. And yeah, I had a few family and my coach and my caddy and everything there to kind of celebrate it yesterday, and had a couple of pints to wash it down.
Ryan, we made so much about the European team's prep in the Ryder Cup, how important it was that they played the BMW PGA Championship leading up to what they did in Rome. Part of that prep was getting waxed by you at Wentworth. How much of the Ryder Cup did you watch last week?
I watched a ton of it. You know, I'm not afraid to admit I feel like an honorary European playing over here for so many years and got so many great mates on that team. And, you know, they were all on form at Wentworth, and it was kind of a bit of a surprise to get it over a couple of them, but you know, it obviously put them in good stead for last week. And I mean, it was enthralling viewing. I think it's probably the best viewing in golf, and amazing to see in our sport when playing what guys can do when they feel like they're playing for something bigger than themselves. And you definitely felt that from the European guys, and certainly got a bit nerve-wracking on Sunday from a Europeans fan perspective. You know, the Americans came out firing, and it was just amazing and great to see, you know, Tommy hit such great shots down the stretch, Bobby Mack step up when he needed to at the end. And yeah, very, very pleased for the guys. And yeah, it was just a great advertisement for golf, I thought, all around. Some of the golf played was just incredible.
I'm just curious, you play a lot of golf on the DP World Tour. You also play a lot of golf on the PGA Tour. Why do you identify a little bit more with the European side as opposed to the American side?
I mean, I've been here since 2015, been based for the most part in Europe and the UK, and you know, played on the Challenge Tour and then the DP World Tour since 2017. So, yeah, I came on tour with a couple of guys that were in that team. I played amateur golf with Tommy when I was sort of in my early 20s. And I just, having a home in the UK, Europe kind of feels like this, or the UK especially feels like the second home. So, I feel like I have to go for Europe. And there's a little bit of a personal connection there as well, which is cool. And, I thought even as a neutral, I thought last week would have been amazing watching. As I said, some of the golf played by both teams was just incredible. And as I said, a great advertisement for golf.
Ryan, you know what it's like playing for something bigger than yourself, having represented New Zealand in the Olympics. You've represented them in the World Cup of Golf a couple times as well. I know you were in the conversation with the President's Cup last year. We now spin it ahead next year with another President's Cup in Montreal. You play a lot of golf on the DP World Tour. Do you feel disconnected at all from the President's Cup process with a lot of guys playing the majority of their golf on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, I definitely was disappointed to miss out last year, and I felt like, being based over here and not knowing a lot of the guys very well, and it certainly didn't help my chances in getting picked, and I'd certainly love to be on that team. I grew up playing team sports. I've got team sports in my family, and I've loved and representing my country when I've got the chance, and would certainly love the chance to represent the internationals next year. And hopefully I get a bit more of a chance to play on the PGA Tour next year and put myself in that conversation for later on next year. It's certainly a lot of motivation for me after missing out last year. And hopefully the form from the last couple of weeks can continue into next year. And I'd love to be on that team in Montreal.
I will not bet against Foxy being on that team in 2024. Best luck in your title defense. Have a few pints on Sunday night. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me again.
Davis Riley. This is a key time for him and a lot of the players competing in the FedEx Cup fall. He's kind of on the bubble for some really cool things in 2024. What are those things? Find out next on Golf Today. And Davis Riley joins us now from the Sanderson Farms Championship. Davis, thanks for the time. As an American golfer, a PGA Tour winner who aspires to one day play in a Ryder Cup, what was your assessment of an energetic, emotional week in Rome?
Yeah, it was crazy. I watched a little bit of it. I remember waking up Thursday morning, or it was either Thursday or Friday, whenever the first day was. But anyways, waking up and we were an 0-4. So it was, as you guys know, in golf or any kind of sport, when you get behind the eight ball, it's kind of hard to play catch up. And they tried to make it interesting there on Sunday, but, Europe came out on top, and it looks like they had a really good week.
And Davis, you were part of a Junior Ryder Cup back in 2014. What was that experience like for you?
Yeah, super cool experience. It was the year it was at Glen Eagles in 2014, and we played the same week as the Ryder Cup, which was really cool. So we played our match. We actually won. We played really well and won the Junior Ryder Cup. USA did, and then we got to go watch, hang out with the guys, play a couple holes with the guys. And it was a really cool week. And I remember, I think Jordan Spieth was making his Ryder Cup debut. And it was pretty cool to see just all the guys I looked up to and guys that I knew as well being on the Ryder Cup team.
Davis, you're a big time sports fan. You love college football, Alabama. You watch the Ryder Cup. For the American golf fan sitting at home, what are the travails, the difficulties of trying to win on the road in sports and in golf?
Oh, it really is. I mean, home field advantage is just such a big thing in sports. And right, like the Ryder Cup, when you're going to Europe and you're playing on European soil and all the fans and, people rooting against you and like just making all the noise, when your opponents are doing really well is very difficult, because as an athlete or anybody playing sports, you feed off those crowds, you feed off that energy, and it can really push you in a good or bad direction for sure.
Davis, coming into the season, Alabama had the longest home winning streak in all of college football. That streak got to 21 games, and then you were the curse. What happened?
Yeah, as I was telling you guys earlier, I went to one Alabama game this year or this fall, and it was at the Texas game, and we lost. So that was pretty tough. I guess I'm 0-1 going to see Alabama play this year, so I figured I'd just stay away and let them do their thing. But no, it was fun. It was a back and forth game. Texas had a really good game, and they kind of pushed through. I mean, we got the lead in the third quarter, but they came out on top there in the fourth quarter and ended up winning the game. So coming off two good weeks, though, and got a tough game this week on the road at College Station versus Texas A&M. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Well, I know you're paying attention to college football, but I know you're also following this FedEx Cup fall. You're number 62 in the standings, trying to get into that top 10. How important is this time of year as you look ahead to some major goodies in 2024?
Yeah, this fall, it's interesting. As opposed to years past, you're kind of just coming off the FedEx Cup playoffs after some time off, started a new season, just kind of kicking the rust off and trying to get a jump start in the fall heading into the new year. But yeah, it's different with the playoffs going from 125 to 70 and guys coming out here, guys fighting for their cards. Fortunately, I'm high up on the list and won't be having to do so, but there's still a lot more to play for, right? Because the 51 to 60 gets you into the first couple designated events, signature events. And so yeah, there's a lot to play for, and I hope to push my number up there so I get into those first couple and make a really nice charge in the fall.
Highlight of the year had to have happened at the Zurich Classic. You team up with Nick Hardy to get your first win on the PGA Tour. Since then, you've had some peaks and valleys with your game. It hasn't necessarily been the level of consistency we had seen prior to that. What's it like balancing getting your first win and then expecting to peel off some more, but then to have to deal with life on the PGA Tour where it can balance out real quick?
Yeah, 100%. Like you said, coming off a good rookie year, wanted to get a win pretty soon after. And yeah, getting the win at Zurich with Nick was amazing, awesome experience. We both played really good golf, and we were just feeding off of each other all week, and it was really fun week. But yeah, like you said, I think I struggled a little bit putting those expectations and really wanting to get in contention immediately. I feel like I got a little impatient with my game and try to just force things more than I had in the past that I showed consistency in the previous year. So yeah, just kind of working on a few things. And also statistically, I didn't drive it as well as I did in my rookie year. So I've been putting a lot of work in the past couple of weeks on trying to get the ball in the fairway more, just so, because that kind of opens up the rest of my game to my strengths, which is my approach play, wedge play, and iron play. So yeah, spending some time doing that and looking to have a good fall.
You live in Mississippi. Now you're playing in Jackson. How are you going to handle this week? You going to keep those headphones on and just keep your head down so you have to avoid all the autograph seekers and folks asking you for tickets?
Yeah, anytime you're playing close to home and you got tons of friends and family supporting you, it's really fun. And like you said, that can also come with more expectations and wanting to do well, really badly. But yeah, I think my job is just to kind of get in my zone and, feed off those crowds when I can, but at the same time, kind of know what I need to do at each moment and take care of the job at hand. And hopefully by that point, I'll find myself hopefully be in a position to win the tournament come the weekend.
Well, if you're in contention on Sunday, maybe Damon, instead of Roll Tide, we'll hear Roll Riley down the stretch.
Right.
Sanderson Farms,
that's right.
Best of luck.
That's right. We like those too.
Speaking of liking it, Damon, loving the flow. The modern mullet, we're going to call this Damon Hack. We have an up-and-comer in the game, Jake Knapp, from Nightclub Bouncer at The Country Club to tour member. Find out more about his journey in the game when we return. Let's welcome in Jake Knapp. And Jake, as a former bouncer/bartender myself, game nope. Respects game back in college. It wasn't for my physique.
Okay.
It was my ability to count a cover charge at Harpo's in Columbia, Missouri. So normally pro golfers, they're soaring with the eagles early in the morning. They're not hooting with the owls at night. How do you fall in that line of work?
Yeah, I needed something to do kind of in that time off. I didn't really have anywhere to play until the Canadian Tour started in May, and I'd missed out on Q school. So I wanted something that would allow me to still practice during the day and didn't really see too many other options and, figured why not give it a go.
What was the craziest thing that had happened to you? I mean, crazy things happen after midnight. What is the craziest thing that happened at the country club?
I'd say every night was kind of the same. Nothing was ever too ridiculous, but I mean, we did have, some nice cars parked out front and things like that. And I remember we kicked out this one guy, and then he started taking the cones around a Lamborghini and started throwing them at the Lamborghini. So that didn't end too well for him, unfortunately.
How often were you having to remove people?
A couple times a night, I would say.
Oh, wow. So you were thrown in the middle of the action. Reminds me of one of my favorite movies.
Roadhouse.
Swayze. Roadhouse. Oh, yeah.
Dalton.
Yeah.
We got to do the side-by-side. Who do you think has the better flow here? We got Swayze is a glamour shot, but we got kind of the candid shot through the foliage at the country club. What do you think, Jake? Who's got the better look?
I don't know. I think it's tough to argue with that. I think he would take the cake.
I think it's pretty close, Jake, but it is emblematic of what professional golfers do when they're in a pinch, when they need to find ways to make ends meet. You know, how tough was it for you to try to find some alternative work to kind of keep the dream alive?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's tough. I mean, obviously you got to, like, swallow your pride a little bit. I mean, you know, I've been playing professionally since 2016 and didn't really have that much success, so kind of just needed to find a way to keep it going. I knew it was what I wanted to do in the long term, but, yeah, needed some money to do some funding and or to get some funding for the next season. And, you know, I'm glad I did it. I mean, looking back at it was a good shell shock for me and helped me appreciate what I get to do day in, day out.
Jake, we could have fun with it now that you're getting ready for your rookie season on the PGA Tour ahead to next year. But after finishing outside the top 100, you're trying to make ends meet. You said get some funding. Were there any moments where you started to question, is this still the path for me? Am I still going to realize my dream of playing on the PGA Tour?
For sure. I mean, I think like anybody would tell you, after a bad season or even a bad tournament, I think all those questions kind of start to pop in your head, especially if you don't have much good stuff to kind of rely on. Obviously I played well in Canada, but, you know, there's an entire another tour in the Corn Ferry that you have to prove yourself on to get to the PGA Tour. And coming out here for the first time, it was definitely a bit painful, not really having any good finishes and just really struggling with my game from top to bottom. So, yeah, I mean, there were definitely questions of, like, you know, I could just kind of stop now. It's not the end of the world. I gave it a good run. But, you know, I knew that I hadn't even scratched my potential yet, so I wanted to get back to work and give myself another shot at it.
Jake, well, you've loved this game for a long time. From what I read, one of your earliest golf memories involved a certain 9-8 beatdown at La Costa about 17 or so years ago. What do you remember?
I remember. I mean, there's not, you know, there aren't a ton of PGA Tour events on the West Coast, and La Costa is only about an hour from home. So my dad took my brother and I down there, and I remember watching John Daly warm up hitting, like, one-handed bunker shots, and then we went out to go watch Tiger play, and I remember bugging him and Stevie all day for a golf ball. Just, you know, can I get a ball? Can I get a ball? Can I get a ball? And then we get to, you know, and Stevie had said, like, after the round, come find us after the round. So then, you know, the match ends. We stand right there, we watch them walk into the locker room, and I'm like, oh man, like that's brutal, like they didn't remember. And then Stevie walks out 30 seconds later, tosses me a ball, and still got it to this day in a little case on my desk, got Tiger on the side, Nike One. It's pretty cool memory.
It's, I mean, pretty amazing to have that happen and then to still cherish that 17 years later where you actually have the ball. That's gotta be pretty special. At what point, I guess early in your golf career, did you know that that's where I want to be? What Tiger's doing as a PGA Tour golfer, that's going to be my career.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've wanted it ever since I was a little kid. You know, I mean, I played every sport growing up until high school, but, you know, I knew it's what I wanted to do. But I think wanting to do it and kind of dreaming about it is one thing, but then when it kind of becomes a reality, it's a whole nother. So, you know, I think probably since I was in kind of that 12 to 15 range, I kind of knew that I was a lot better at golf than most kids than I was at other sports. And I was like, man, I need to really put, you know, all my time and effort into this. And I enjoyed it too. I got an older brother who's 3 years older than me, and he enjoyed playing competitively. So, always just kind of wanted to strive to be like him. So yeah, it was, ever since an early age, it was definitely something I knew I wanted to do.
Speaking of numbers, you're first in driving distance at 325.5, a pop ahead of Chris Goddard, ahead of Alejandro Tosti. Everybody at home wants to get a little longer off the tee. You know this, Jake. What makes you so long, and how can you help us?
I mean, you know, when it comes down to it, you just got to get that club moving fast, however you got to do it. I mean, it's cool out here. I mean, there's so many different guys that hit it far, all different shapes and sizes, and you know, there's guys who train hard to hit it far, and there's guys who just kind of wake up, and that's just, you know, they're country strong, and they just do it. So, I mean, for me, I'm a big workout guy, so I would say get in the gym, start moving around some heavy weight, and, you know, that club will start to feel a little lighter.
Jake, you're an easy guy to root for. Best of luck this week. Look forward to covering you next season on the PGA Tour as well.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys. Thank you.
All right, we got to do one more side by side. Jake and Dalton, one of my favorite lines in the movie in Roadhouse. We're just here to have a good time. You're too stupid to have a good time. Dalton, sending a message. Hour number two of golf today. European golf fans will never get sick of seeing this. Tommy Fleetwood, the deciding point at the 44th edition of the Ryder Cup, the captain's pick, showing out with a 3-1 record in Rome. How about that for Tommy and the lads and the party? Where it's just getting started for Captain Luke Donald.
Yeah, it went into Monday morning.
Might have gone into Tuesday.
Possibly.
Spilling into Wednesday.
Why not? Tommy.
16.5 to 11.5, the final margin.
And here we go. See you in 2025, the famous sign, the black course, extremely difficult course, I can attest. Only for highly skilled golfers.
They got to add, extremely difficult for a Road Rider Cup team.
Wow. Well, let's see. You know, Han Solo said, don't ever tell me the odds. We have the odds presented by our buddies at BetMGM. U.S. predicted to win, minus 135, Europe plus 150, a tie plus 12,000. So, yeah, we're a couple of years away, but it's got to be fun for a little way too early Rider Cup predictions. So, George, do you want to lead us off?
I mean, we have both nailed our predictions leading up to the 2023 Ryder Cup.
I think a lot of people probably thought Europe would win. I think, don't you think, just in terms of the
streak? But it's amazing. The books didn't think that way.
Yeah.
Even a year out, the books were
true.
Heavy on Team USA, just
true.
Because if you look neutral site 1 through 12, they were thinking, okay, Americans have all this talent, but
yeah.
Europeans once again hold serve. So let's get to 2025. What crystal ball time, Damon.
You want me to go first?
We nailed 2023. Are we going to stick the landing with 2025? You tee off first.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you who I think is going to win. You want to know who's going to win?
No, save that. We're going to go.
You want to know who's going to be on the team?
Yeah.
Well, Rory's
what's Europe going to look like? What's well, US going to look
Rory's going to be on the team. Victor Hovland's going to be on
the
team.
Going to be the stars. What did you?
John Rahm is going to be. I mean, I think the guys that we saw carrying the team this year will be the same centerpiece players for Team Europe in 2020. This is the sweet spot for them. Mm-hmm. John Rahm is all in. Rory McIlroy now in the second half of his Ryder Cup career is all in. Victor Hovland, you know, he hasn't even ascended to number one in the world, but it feels like that is possibly only a matter of time, not to mention a first major championship for them. So as we talk about this big advantage for the home team, some might say, and I will say, that the European team might be in the best position it has for a long time to go on the road and win.
Let's take a look at the graphics. What are the predictions we got? I'll go Europe first. I got Luke Donald as the captain for 2025 for Team Europe. John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Victor Hovland, Ludvig Åberg are going to be my stars. These will be the guys that carry the team, the Højgaard twins.
I'm going to carry the team.
Are going to be the breakout stars for Team Europe. They're going to be two guys who potentially play together, feed off each other. I think Justin Rose, some were saying, oh, maybe he's assistant captain a couple of years. I think it's going to be his last big Ryder Cup. That's going to be your core for the 2025 European Ryder Cup team. I think Luke Donald, first time since Bernard Gallagher in the early 90s, will be a repeat captain, just how things have laid out.
It'll be fascinating to see what the European Ryder Cup franchise believes is the right move here. As you said, it hasn't happened in decades that you'd have a back-to-back European Ryder Cup captain. Of course, we know that Davis Love was a captain twice for the United States, not consecutively. Tom Watson was brought back as well. You have to think that the 12 men in the team room would have no problem, would probably love to see, encourage even, having Luke Donald back with that walkie-talkie, pressing those buttons. He has a lot of great ties, of course, to the United States, married an American woman, went to college at Northwestern, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, let's get to the U.S. predictions. I'm going to show you what I have here for the U.S. side. It's Tiger Woods as the Ryder Cup captain in Bethpage. I'm going to say that the stars carrying that team will be Max Homa, Scottie Scheffler, Patrick Cantlay, Colin Morikawa, the young breakout stars, Cameron Young, Sahith Theegala, and Nick Dunlap. I think Nick Dunlap is going to be the next Aubert that we saw for Europe.
You've seen enough.
Where he's going to go straight from the college ranks and potentially be a factor in the Ryder Cup. I think 2 years from now, DJ went 5-0 in Whistling Straits.
Yeah. We didn't see him in 2023.
He didn't. He's been playing on a different tour. I think DJ could be the surprise, impactful veteran that has his last dance in the Ryder Cup. I don't think his story is said and done. What
do
you have in the U.S.
Lots of machinations and movement still to come in professional golf. Now, my time for Europe, is it my turn to make European team predictions? I'm going to go U.S. first. I'm going U.S. team predictions first. Okay, let's see what we have here. I think Tiger Woods as well.
You got to get up to speed here.
Cap. I'll tell you what, we got lots going on here on this Wednesday. Tiger, I think it's a slam dunk. You know, we're talking about talismanic figures that have imbued the European franchise for decades, you know, none bigger than Seve Ballesteros. You have a walking, living, breathing example in Tiger Woods to be that talisman for the U.S. Scotty, Colin, I have JT as a star as well. Max Homa has been absolutely practically unbeatable across the President's Cup and Ryder Cup franchises. Breakout stars, how about Pearson Cootie making a Ryder Cup debut? I agree with Sahith. I have Michael Thorbjornsson dealing with some back issues right now, but someone who won the U.S. Junior Amateur and the Massachusetts State Amateur and the Western Amateur, and Brooks Koepka, my impactful veteran. As far as my European predictions now, Luke Donald, I agree with you. We got Rahm, Rory, Hovland, Fleetwood. Why are you going to mix up anything? Keep those guys. Vincent Norman, also from Sweden. Can you imagine having a little Norman Aubert dynamic duo? Aaron Rye playing fantastic golf for England. The Højgaard twins as well. And Tyrrell Hatton will make his fourth straight start in a Ryder Cup.
Who's going to win it? What do you got?
Europe, 14.5, 13.5.
You have Europe winning on Europe. The road.
Rory McIlroy made me a believer, and Shane Lowry,
you're
banging on the desk.
Plus 150.
Why not, you know? What do you think? You think Europe's going to win?
I think Americans win 15-13. If it wasn't
close.
If it wasn't at Bethpage, then I'd maybe be prisoner of the moment and think, okay, Europeans can end the streak. You're in New York. In front of those.
Lots of Irish and Italian, you know, immigrants on Long Island. They might be pulling for the Molinaris, you know what I'm saying? Little Shane Lowry and Rory.
Mark this date. Let's remember this wager 2 years from now.
Going to be a lot of fun, these early predictions for 2025.
Very much so. Keeping it going here on Golf Today. And it's the USGA awarding its latest round of idea grants to 27 first tee chapters across America, building upon a long-standing commitment to create a more accessible game and impacting communities through golf. From chapters in major urban markets, mountainous regions, and predominantly Hispanic communities targeting low-income families across the country, the USGA and first tee aim to level the playing field by providing club-in-hand experiences to every junior that wants to play golf and benefit from the character-building lessons the sport provides.
And the first tee, Greater Tallahassee, is one of this year's recipients. The chapter was launched in July of 2022, so very recently. It just completed its inaugural year. Previously, there was no golf development program for youth in the area. Tracy Marple partnered with the Urban Family in 2021 to establish First Tee Greater Tallahassee. She is a certified First Tee coach and girls golf site director, and great to have Tracy with us. How important is this idea grant in terms of the money and funds available to help you do, Tracy, what you do?
Well, thank you, Damon and George, for having me on today. And very quickly, I also want to thank the USGA for believing in us, because when we applied for this grant, we were only 6 months old. And to get this just was very thrilling, and it's the very first grant we've ever received. So the first thing we did was look at the in-school programs, because we could reach the most amount of kids in the shortest period of time. With one elementary school, you can reach 500 to 700 kids and have an impact on them. So with this grant, a couple of relationships that were forged, we went into one of the schools that's in the poorest zip code in the state of Florida and took them on a golf clinic to Southwood Golf Club. And they got to meet Charlie Ward. Charlie Ward gave them a Bridge to Life discussion. John Pat got up on Top Tracer with these kids. The mayor came out, commissioners came out. You know, it was a fun day for all. And we've continued our relationship with them with an in-school program. And now we've got an after-school program with them as well. There's John. So The other thing is that we've created a relationship with Florida A&M, the university, and their K-12 developmental research school. So this grant has enabled us to buy all of their equipment, and it is a K-12 school, so that was pretty extensive, providing their PE teachers with all the training and curriculum materials they're going to need. And then to make it stick, we send coaches in for about 6 to 8 weeks to work with those PE teachers in the classroom with the kids to make sure they understand how to do things that they really already like to do, like play baseball, but we teach them how to play golf baseball. So it's been very impactful for us. And those kids will also go on a winter golf clinic field trip to the historical Jake Gaither golf property, which is only about a mile away from their campus. But the majority of them have never had a golf club in their hand, nor have they ever been at that golf course. So this is a very, very special grant. In addition to being our first one, it's going to have an impact on many, many, many kids.
Well, it's amazing to have them have that type of introduction to the game of golf. Over the past year, how much has the program been able to grow?
Well, we believe by the end of this year, we're on track to have impacted about 5,000 students. And by the end of next year, we believe it'll be about 10,000 students. So we've been able to do all the traditional things that a first tee program does in our first year, from the in-school program. We've activated 9 schools so far. The Leon County School System has requested the first tee program in all of their schools. And in August, we did a training with all of their PE teachers, and we're in the process of getting each of those schools activated. So if all those elementaries and middle schools get activated, you're talking about 23,000 kids. And then Jefferson County has also come on board this year. So that's a K-12 campus with around 700 kids. So we're really excited about getting out there to help them. And we started a girls' golf closet this year. So girls that don't have access to golf attire and making them feel special, that's kind of taken a life of its own. So that's an exciting project. And of course, the fundraising and grant writing and all those things that go along with running a nonprofit.
Tracy, keep doing what you're doing. We love to see it, and we'll be cheering you on from the sidelines. Thanks for the time.
Thank you so much.
Still to come on the show, number 72 in golf. You're pro on the PGA Tour, average round. If you're Nick Taylor and you're thinking 72 feet, it's a signature moment of not just your career, but Canadian golf fans everywhere. We're going to relive his win at the RBC Canadian Open. Let me talk next year's Presidents Cup ahead.
Great to have Nick Taylor joining us from Sanderson for a past champ chat. I got to start RBC Canadian Open, and why not? You're wearing the AirPods just like you were in the final round. But I have to ask you, apparently when you celebrated that win, you were going to McDonald's and Wayne Gretzky called you. That's what I read. A true story? How did that happen?
Very true. Very true. It was we left the course maybe 10:30 or so, and it was a long day with playoff, you know, some celebratory stuff at the golf course. So we were starving. First thing we see outside of the course is the Golden Arches. So we pulled into McDonald's, and we pull into the drive-through, and pops up on the screen, Wayne Gretzky's calling, who I actually didn't even have his number. So the funny thing that his caller ID already popped up. So I looked at the guys in the car. I said, I got to take this call. So we reversed out of the drive-through, and Wayne was very nice for a few minutes, chatted, and then we got some food.
When the great one calls you, does it say maybe Wayne Gretzky, maybe the great one? Spam, unknown.
No,
what did
no,
it
yeah.
say?
No, maybe. It is very definitive Wayne Gretzky.
And with golfers, I feel like that's kind of one of the biggest misperceptions is that you win an event like that, you see this big raucous atmosphere and party for everyone on hand, but then you have to do all the media obligations, and they think, okay, that night you're going to have this big celebration with friends and family, and you end up going to McDonald's.
Yeah, I've been lucky enough to win three times. I think each win we've scaled up a little bit. Sanderson, my first win, I did laundry that night with Adam Hadwin, so that was it there. And you know, we stayed downtown Toronto that whole week, so we went down and had a good time with a few friends. And then once I got home, I actually had a good celebration with friends and family. But you know, the older you get, you got to savor all the wins you can. So it was nice to celebrate that one.
Well, Nick, I don't think it's an exaggeration by saying you've hit one of the greatest putts in the history of the PGA Tour. What was the read? Ball left, couple balls right, a double, a triple breaker. What was the read for this 72-foot putt?
Yeah, so the coverage there, it's deceiving with how much it actually broke. It was probably maybe 5-6 feet out to the left. I'd had, once on top of that plateau, I had had that putt in the second playoff hole. So I had a general idea of what the last 20 feet were going to do. That whole thing was speed. Halfway there, it looked like it was pretty good. But again, being that far away, I'm just hoping to get it close. And when I disappear, there's that half a second of complete shock. And then Dave came and tackled me. So all that was a lot of fun.
I mean, obviously, the signature moment of your career. We got to work on your Google SEO. We're Googling Nick Taylor, of course, doing some show notes beforehand. And the very first image that pops up, I don't know if you've seen this, Nick. If you Google your name, we've got a one-handed, that's the very first image that pops up. How is that the first image and not you making the 72-footer?
Four left. Yeah, exactly.
Any idea where that's from?
I got to talk to somebody at Google. No idea. It looks like within the last year, but I got to update that photo.
Yeah, you got to call somebody. Maybe the great one can help you out. How's your life changed, Nick? I mean, this is one of the great moments in Canadian sports history. You have the most famous sportsman of all time in the country calling you. How is life different a few months later?
You know, at home, life is a whole lot different. We're still seeing everybody we love to see with family and friends. I think I probably underestimated maybe the amount of people that have come up and said amazing things to me in a coffee shop or, you know, at a golf course in context, obviously. But the amount of stories I've heard where people remember exactly where they were when the putt went in and the kind of how they reacted to it, it's been incredible to hear those stories. So that's probably blown me away the most. But yeah, not much has changed for us family at home, but it's been nice to, you know, people come up and say nice things.
I doubt anyone topped Adam Hadwin's attempted celebration, which was maybe 1A, 1B among funniest moments last season on the PGA Tour. You've had this brethren of Canadians. We had Mackenzie Hughes on the show just yesterday. All these guys who won this past season on the PGA Tour or who have won in their career on the PGA Tour. We have Royal Montreal less than a year out for the President's Cup. How much talk have you had with your fellow countrymen on just how special that event's going to be and the fact that there's a streak the President's Cup international side wants to end?
Certainly. It's always been a big goal of mine to play for the President's Cup. I haven't been able to do it. I think I've probably never had more motivation than having it hosted in my country, having Mike Weir as the captain. I think Canadian golf's never been stronger with how many people we've had win in the last handful of years, being on the PGA Tour. So yeah, it's a huge motivating factor for me for, you know, it's about a year from now. You know, this year, Adam Hadwin and I played great at Zurich, so hopefully that caught Weir's eye. But yeah, I think we're really looking forward to it. So there's a lot to work for and play for this year, and that being kind of the last event that I really want to play.
Well, we're talking about impactful Canadians in sports, Wayne Gretzky. How about Mike Weir, what he's meant to your generation of PGA Tour player?
He's been huge. You know, I think a lot of players, you know, in my generation would agree that he was definitely the guy that probably made us believe the most that we could make it, you know, coming from a similar climate where you can't really golf year-round. Someone that's not overly athletic, looking like a Tiger Woods, that really made golf cool. You know, someone that looks like us, that played hockey growing up, and, you know, just, you know, made us believe that we can make it. So I think you're seeing that wave now.
One last question before we let you go. You've won before in the fall, won this event back in 2014 with the new look fall. What's the approach like for you?
You know, I'm fortunate this year to have made the playoffs. And so the fall won't affect my standings. So I'm looking just to stay sharp for the most part, play the Shriners and the Zozo, have some time off with family, kind of reflect on the season and get ready for Maui. So that's kind of been my approach this fall. I haven't really had a chance to have an off season before. So I'm looking forward to a good chunk of time off, but also try to stay sharp by playing a couple events.
Nice to be a man who has Maui on the mind.
Yeah, and Nick gave us the moment of 2023. You can take some time off as far as I'm concerned. We appreciate the time. Enjoy that family time. We'll speak to you down the road.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
I think we should see it one more time.
At least one more time.
Just to have a walk-off like this, 4 or 5 feet of break. Someone scripted this? You'd say, that's ridiculous. This movie's absurd. This couldn't happen in real life.
Yeah.
Nick Taylor lived it.
A lot of glasses of Molson spilled on that Sunday.
A couple of bats.
Natasha Andreoun joins us now on the show. And Natasha, you're in the enviable spot of not having to sweat out this week with the Epson Tour Championship. Do you still feel some stress, or are you just playing with a lot of freedom this week?
Definitely feel a little stressed out coming into the end of the week. I want to have a good showing. I want to end this year well, even though things have happened that I did not dream of starting out this year. But, you know, you always want to play well. But there's also a little bit of freedom out here that I know that I've secured my card. So I'm just really excited to just fight it out and see what happens.
How challenging were the early parts of the year? It sounds like you had to overcome some things to get to this moment of achievement.
It was super challenging. I think just learning how to be on tour, struggling to, you know, schedule your flights, get the transportation, being on your own out there, that was really hard and really grueling. So, I mean, just to overcome it and just to see everything play out this year, it's pretty cool, yeah.
It's all the little stuff you don't think of. What credit card to use, points and miles, and what's the closest hotel to the course that's clean that I feel good and comfortable at and staying at? It's the nitty-gritty behind the scenes that you don't think of. A year ago, when you were playing at San Jose State in the 2022 NCAAs, you finished runner-up to Rose Zhang by, I believe, a single shot. Do you ever reflect back on that week that was?
Well, that week was what secured me my Julie Inkster Senior Award. So it was an extremely special week. It was kind of quick, I guess. Everything happened really quickly. And I didn't even know that I was at that position when I was playing golf and I was, you know, finishing it out on 18. I have no idea that that putt was to kind of bring us into match play. And if I made that putt, we were going to go against maybe Stanford, or, and then if I made it, then we were going to go against Oregon. Like, I had no idea that was happening at all. And when I made it and everyone's like, you're second. I'm like, what? Like, I didn't see anything happen. So, yeah, that week was really special. I mean, before that year too, I had a metatarsal injury, like a little fracture on my foot. So, I mean, I didn't know if I was going to go do golf and do what I'm doing now, but just to see how well I did that year and just to see how well I'm doing on the Epson Tour, it's been a really, really, really cool life so far.
How difficult was that injury to overcome, physical therapy, time away from the game?
So that happened during COVID, and it happened, like, I had an MRI, and the doctor was like, yep, you have a stress fracture. And I remember hitting golf balls the day before and just kind of sitting on the grass being like, I really don't think I can do this. And my life changed like that. My team was playing. I was in my room and I was having online classes. So there's no socialization at all. There's no going out. There's no golfing. But that was really difficult for me. But it also opened up a door for me to explore other things in my life. And I went and did something at the country club. I was a bad girl, you know, seeing people play golf and not you play golf. It was a really weird feeling, but it definitely motivated me. It definitely opened up my life to just other things. And I'm really grateful for it because I see everything in such a different perspective now.
Well, you've been playing the game for such a long time. I read that your dad put a golf club in your hands when you were 4 years old and you were like Anakin Skywalker with a lightsaber. You can move things around with your mind. True story, you were like a natural, like you were striping the ball almost as soon as your dad put a golf club in your hands. True?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm not Anakin Skywalker-esque, but he was maybe in his head, But I mean, I made contact with like a men's golf club. And so he was like, ooh, like maybe this is something, you know? So, and then he was like, coach, like there's something here. And so, he was like kind of taken aback. I think it was a lot out of context in his head. I think it was like super exaggerated, but, he definitely saw something. And then I won my first Junior Worlds And it was like, I always call it like a horse that was like kind of with the blinds on. It was just golf from then on. Yeah.
Well, it's clearly paying off as you're getting ready for the next step in your professional career. After this week, you got a little gap before the LPGA Tour schedule starts in 2024. How are you going to spend that time to prep yourself for the LPGA Tour?
I'm actually going to Malaysia.
Incredible.
Malaysia. The Maybank LPGA in Malaysia. So oh, not nice. A break.
That is we're fantastic.
Back on the, we're there back you on the grind.
Right back to the grind.
Right. I'm going to fly, grind it out. And then, yeah. So, I mean, and then I'm going to play the Pebble Beach Pro-Am after that. So, I mean, even more. So, you know, not an off season. Just keep on grinding.
Oh,
I'm
nice.
Excited.
You have a pretty full fall schedule ahead of you then.
Yes. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, seeing your Instagram page, I know you're a bit of a foodie. You like the crawfish beignets and the pork bao dumplings. So you'll be able to explore some great, you know, places to eat food in your travels.
Yeah. I love eating. Oh my gosh.
Wow. How about that in and out?
That's the perfect
meal.
That was
an experience. Yeah. I really love food. I love all types of food. And you know, I love making posts about it. I just love to show my personality and obviously feel a little bougie sometimes, but
don't we all, Natasha? Don't we all
be bougie? Right with you, Natasha. Thanks for the time and best of luck going forward. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
It was so cool chatting with you guys. I see you guys all the time on TV, so this is really surreal. So thank you guys for taking the time. Yeah.
Oh, awesome to have you join us.
Pleasure is all ours. And a big week on the Korn Ferry Tour as well. Big times in our game. This is Ryan McCormick. You know, players punching their tickets in different ways. This young man would, you know, model and build courses over the PGA Tour 2K.
Or parents say, stop playing video games. What good's it going to do you? Only helps him with his career.
Ryan joins us now from Indiana. It's great to spend some time with you, buddy. I know your dad, Mark, very well, longtime pro at Suburban, but I never knew this predilection for video games. Ryan, how did this begin?
Yeah, it's just one of those COVID things that when you've got nothing to do, playing video games with some buddies, found a community of golf nerds who love to design courses and went down a YouTube rabbit hole on how they do it and figured this off season I could implement it this year, and here we are.
How long does it take to build a course and replicate what you see on the Korn Ferry Tour? Give us the details.
I would say about a half a day. You know, there are a lot of people out there who are kind of doing this sort of thing, so every time I do it, it gets a little easier. But it's fun getting to a tournament on Monday or Tuesday and being able to put some of the grandstands in and some of the camera towers sometimes so that, you know, I can figure out some aiming spots and, just try to immerse myself in the way the course is playing. And, it's been a fun activity for me to, you know, help me get ready on Thursday, Fridays, and Saturday, Sundays as well.
Well, we just heard Tyreek Hill saying he plays Madden before games for the Dolphins to see what the corners are like. First time I'm hearing a golfer using video game mapping to figure out lines to take off the tee, sight lines, all that type of stuff. Pretty innovative. Have you seen a noticeable impact in how it's helped you?
For sure. I think everybody who plays can relate when they say, you know, when they're done with a round, and they're like, man, if I went back out right now, I definitely feel like I could play better. I wouldn't have made triple because I wouldn't have hit it at that pin, or, you know, I wouldn't have hit that drive there. I would have hit a 4-iron. And so for me, it feels like I kind of get past that playing a little virtually. And so it's helped me with some decision making, just, you know, helps make those decisions on the golf course a lot easier and quicker.
So you strike me, Ryan, as a little bit more new school. You're old man. I got to say old school. Competed in the U.S. Open in 2012 in San Francisco, U.S. Senior Opens. What are those conversations like around the dinner table when you're discussing preparation to compete?
It's awesome. I lean on him quite a bit. I've leaned on him quite a bit throughout my life. You know, I remember back in high school, we used to talk about every single competitive round that I played. Recapped it, went through all of my shots, and that helped me so much develop, you know, so quickly as a young player And just having a father who knows the game at such a high level and can relate to some of the things I'm feeling out there on the course, you know, when it comes to competing and trying to win and do well when it matters. So, you know, I lucked out that, you know, he's been just as interested as I am in getting better through the years, and he still is now. So we share that passion now.
What's it been like for him to see you about to make this next step onto the PGA Tour?
It's cool. You know, we don't really get into too much about the future. You know, usually when I see him, it's catching up, or maybe we're trying to go play nine holes when we can. You know, obviously, I've been trying to do this for a long time, and we've been close the last couple of years. So I'm trying to close it out this week. And, you know, I'm sure he'll be here on the weekend, and so it'll be great for him to support me out here.
You're trying to close out this week. You're a 22nd in the standings. You know what's at stake. How do you narrow the tunnel vision for the Korn Ferry Tour Championship and not dream of what could be the next step?
Yeah, sure. You know, look, I've dreamt of this my whole life, and, you know, it's great. That doesn't really help me with my first tee ball on Thursday. So I'm just going to kind of continue to do the same thing that I've done really the past few years. I've had some success out here and been very close, and I really like the way my game is feeling this week. And just going to continue to do the same things I've done over the course of the year.
Well, Ryan, as someone who spent many a week at the Masters with your old man, I got a little tear in my eye. I'm just so proud of you from Stamford, Connecticut. Best of luck this week and going forward, and I hope your folks are watching this interview right now.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. So thank you.